Like a siren, California's Silicon Valley seems to beckon members of the Obama administration. But the land of startups and technology innovation isn't all that interested in Washington, or at least not in federal contracting. Jonathan Aberman is the managing director of Amplifier Ventures and the chairman of Tandem NSI, both focused on startups locally. He explains why government buyers looking for non-traditional or startup suppliers need to look beyond mainstream VC activity.
Certainly, the people that are being tasked with finding emerging technology have always been very interested in venture capital industry, and with no small wonder. I think in society generally, we think that venture capitalists are the people who finance the next great industries. It's a nice myth that, speaking to somebody who's been in the venture industry for a long time, people like, and sort of like teddy bears and picnics and goodnight moon, it's a nice myth.
Until you work for a startup. So the question then is, yes. I mean, how healthy is that industry, and why should the government be interested in the health of startups and venture capital?
Well, what's interesting about the venture capital industry is what many people don't appreciate is it's basically an investment management business where people get money from wealthy institutions and individuals and place it in startups. The VC industry as a whole is reaching a level of investment that it has only reached one other time, and that was during the internet bubble of the late 1999-2000s. And we're still at about half that. But having said that, there was roughly $17 billion, almost $18 billion that went into startups in the second quarter. It's a very, very strong market, but it's a market that's very, very interesting in how it's segmented.
And that's the question. Where is that money going? What industries, what segments of existing industries are really hot now?
And that's why I think that the government should be paying attention, because very little of this money is going into things that would be technologies that would be of what I would call national importance to the national security establishment. For example, only 2% of the money that went into internet software deals in that quarter, only 2% went into cybersecurity and monitoring. That's 2%. And if you added on top of that money that went into mobile deals, well, roughly 7% of mobile deals went into security. So that means that the great preponderance of money is going into things like Snapchat and Airbnb. For example, Airbnb, you know, they're just trying to blow up the hospitality industry by letting us all rent out our extra bedrooms while we walk around in our underwear eating Cheetos.
Two criminals.
Well, yes, at least two. Raised $1.5 billion last quarter. $1.5 billion. But it wasn't alone. Snapchat raised...
So in other words, 10% of almost
10%
of all the capital.
And so what you have is companies like Airbnb, Snapchat, DocuSign, even here in town, Vox Media, which got $200 million from... one of the big, I think it was NBC recently. The point is that there's an awful lot of money now going into venture capital, going into startups, but very little of it is going into companies and technologies of national security importance nationally.
But maybe another way to look at this is that those companies that might be of importance to the federal government don't attract big dollars, but that doesn't mean that $10 million here, $20 million there is not going to something that really matters. But because it's narrow in focus, it doesn't need the kind of money that an Airbnb or a Snapchat might attract.
Well, I think that's true because the way that the business of venture capital is focused right now, it is focused on trying to find big wins in short time periods. Venture capital has become a momentum-based industry where what they're hoping for is to create the next $1 billion, $2 billion company, sell it to whoever they can. Interestingly enough, I mean, it's why a company like Uber, for example, has a $50 billion valuation. But, you know, to your point, Tom, yes, you're right. $10, $20 million, I mean, an awful lot to a management cybersecurity startup. You know, in the last quarter in DC, there were, as far as I can tell, only three venture-backed deals in the cyber security space.
Were those?
It was Distill Networks is probably the biggest one, and that was $20 million. And that was the biggest one. And the next two were much smaller. Threat Connect was $1.5 million. So the point is that nationally, there's not a lot of money going into national security related technologies. And locally, there's very little venture capital money going into it. So it's a fascinating disconnect to my mind where you've got DHS and DOD going out to the Valley to try to be close to VCs, talking with funds like Andreessen Horowitz to try to understand how to get more close to startups. But the reality is, when you talk with people that are involved in national security startups, they tell a very different story. So I was talking on Friday with Kevin DeSanto of Kips DeSanto, the local investment bank that really specializes in M&A in national security. And his observation was that most of the startups in our region that are around these technologies actually are individuals or groups that are funded by the federal government to work on a project that's of national importance, and ultimately they spin up a company on the revenue of the federal contract. And by the same token, the national security integrators, Lockheed Martin and so forth, have figured out that they're not really good at managing product companies. In fact, a lot of them are selling them off. I mean, General Dynamics sold off Fidelis recently. Nantex sold off their division, the cyber division, to CounterTrack. So what you're seeing is an interesting dynamic where the reality of starting cyber businesses seems to be not venture-backed companies. It actually seems to be government financing converting into a startup.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman. He is the chairman of Amplifier Ventures and also the founder of the nonprofit Tandem NSI. And so as a federal program manager or contracting officer, and I'm looking at this market for sources, what does this all mean to me? Why is this important?
Well, I think that if you're looking for innovation, the reality is that the venture capital industry is not a leading indicator. The venture capital industry is a fund management business that's designed to generate extraordinary returns for their investors in a short period of time these days. So the VCs look for whatever the hot trends are, whatever Wall Street wants to take public. They're not looking to make 5-10 year investments anymore. It's just not the way it's done. So if I'm a project manager, if I am an integrator and I'm looking for innovation, I'm probably spending more time now looking at the S&T establishment, the R&D dollars, and trying to find the non-traditional innovators, the people who are doing truly different things, and getting them bolted into my product offerings if I'm an integrator. And if I'm a project manager, figuring out how I can get those companies another research contract to help them grow, because the VC industry is not going to solve that problem.
So that means really then the government is almost its self-finance here, because the annuity from a government contract can be what it takes to get a company going.
But in effect, it always has been. And that's the part that really is interesting. The venture capital industry doesn't start industries. The venture capital industry moves along industrial trends. The venture capital industry didn't start the semiconductor industry. The federal government did through NASA and the needs for there to be good targeting for our missiles. The venture capital industry didn't start the modern mobile industry. It came out of GPS. The venture capital industry didn't start the internet. We could go on and on. The point is that we spend a lot of time right now focusing on where to find innovators. And the reality is that innovators are out there, but you have to spread cheese in front of the mice in a way that they want to acquire the cheese. And the venture capital industry is not designed to solve the systemic problem. It's just not. And the data shows there's a lot of money out there where there's momentum. These companies here in D.C. that are growing on the backs of government dollars, at some point, if they develop a commercial product that's really compelling, somebody will buy them in the private sector and they will become part of a private company. Or if there's a big commercial opportunity, dollars will come. But VC is a lagging indicator, not a leading indicator. It's always been.
And so I guess the question is, how resilient is the government market from the point of view of local non-traditionals when they're working towards, say, installing Einstein 3 in all of the federal agencies? Does that leave much of a market for detection software, mitigation software?
Well, this is a big problem, and this is something that you and I and Stan Soloway talked about last month when we were together, and it's an ongoing issue, which is the federal government needs to, particularly in the technology area, needs to be focusing on how to create open networks or networks that can bolt in the best possible technology instead of being enslaved by legacy systems, and by the same token, being enslaved by legacy contract vehicles. As you know, Tandem NSI and what we've been doing and seeing, Professional Service Council and others, there are ways that you can break these silos down. But that's my point, Tom, which is that there is no easy answer. We can't outsource this to the venture capital community and expect them to solve this problem. This is something that has to be done in Washington with process change and technology scouting changes and changes in how we hand out R&D dollars. We're going to have to solve this problem ourselves here in D.C. It's not going to happen elsewhere.
And speaking of the Professional Services Council, they and several other trade groups representing federal contractors shouted back at the White House a couple of weeks ago saying, stop issuing regulations solely for government contractors that you can't get Congress to pass for all of business, such as a higher minimum wage for people doing federal contracting and so on. Mm-hmm. There's been 12 of them since 2009
sure.
that are getting to be costly. Could that be a limiting factor in the interest of startups to say, you know, what do I want to work for them for when they have 15 rules that don't apply to me operating in the commercial sector?
Well, the federal acquisition rules and defense federal acquisition rules provide a lot of impediments to entrepreneurs and startup entrepreneurs wanting to work with the government. That's something that Tandem NSI is involved in, and you and I have talked about a lot over the last year and a half. I think that there is a real need for streamlining, both in the early stages of the business lives and also in the later stages. The issue fundamentally is there is a disconnect between how Congress and our policymakers think about where innovation comes from in this country and where it actually comes from generally. there is far too much of a cult around venture capital and startups, and not enough of an appreciation of where innovation really comes from, which is federally funded R&D. So until we have an intelligent conversation about that, we're going to have executive action, who's ever the president, trying to break log jams, do whatever economic engineering they want to do. At the same time, Congress is trying to do whatever they want to do, which is how you end up with an F-35, and you end up with littoral ships, and you end up with federal wages being higher for government contractors. Nobody's having a conversation about innovation. Everybody's having a conversation about how to use government contracting rules to advance their own narrow economic interests, and that's never going to work.